on RSN 927's Racing Pulse, welcome to The Verdict.
It's a tougher training environment now because there's now 15 trainers in Victoria that you'd be just as happy to give a horse to as the top two trainers.
But if you've got city class races and decent horses, why wouldn't you bet there? I'd rather bet there than on a biased track.
What decision is made in the current climate? Do they take the cash or do they continue with their current partner who does an outstanding job and is also a partner in racing.com?
Why not just pour the resources into tracks that we know race well and don't have as many issues as others, make them as good as possible rather than trying to appease every country town that has a cup meeting because they want to have a cup meeting?
As far as discussions about what does it mean for these races and that race and horse movement and internationals, I now don't care. I just want to beat the virus.
Blaisdell threw out and was very bold in doing it and was challenged at times as well. So it was a monstrous win.
The world of the triple place parlay has there's a few bumps in the road have appeared.
It is that time of the week on a Monday where we have The Verdict with the best in the business, giving us all the dissection of the weekend, the winners, the losers, the stories, the drama. Matty Stewart and Mick Sharkey join us, and it's with some trepidation we march into today's verdict because we're all on Zoom in different venues. So fingers crossed this works well. It may be a little tricky, but for those who are listening at home, it'll be fly-by-the-seat-of-your-pants stuff. We've got so much news to talk about. Some good jump-outs at Flemington this morning. We will keep you up to date with that as well. But first of all, good morning, gents. And two gents who had an outstanding weekend on the punt and on the tip. They must be cashed up. Matty Stewart, you must be laughing. Declared home of the brave.
I half got it right, Falgate. My intention in the morning was to go a full parlay home of the brave into Octane, and I was really focused on it. And then I thought, oh, difficult times, bills, should I be a bit more conservative? So I had a reasonably significant bet on home of the brave, but then didn't completely parlay it into Octane, so because I got weak at the knees. So, yeah, look, it was a refreshingly good day for me, and it was good to get your thought process right when you think one's a good thing and that it all works out. So, yeah, no, it was a satisfying day.
It's not like you to lose your bottle.
Yeah, I know, but this is the times we're living in, Michael. I'm suddenly thinking negative thoughts when I should be just ploughing forward. So, anyway, look, it was a good result. It was good just to see horses win when you think that's what they should do, basically.
Yeah, very good to see some nice horses back. We'll talk about that. Mick Sharkey, who unloaded a very ambitious multi on the Friday form. Yes, well, until we got to the last race where everyone was on Savvy Lad to basically retire. How are you, Sharky?
I've just gotten over your early crow on social media. You broke you made the cardinal sin, let's just put it out there. You said, oh, Savvy Lad, oh, Shark's gone, and he hasn't tipped the card, but he's just about done it. Oh, here's Savvy Lad, we're all going to retire, and then what happens to Savvy Lad? What happens to Savvy Lad, Michael? I'll tell you what happens.
It was a very ugly watch.
He gets beaten. It was, but you know what? We had that much money by that point of the day, it didn't even matter.
Hey, what about this SMS that's come through? Yeah. Thanks, Matty. You got me the quaddy champion. Thanks, Spunky. Cheers.
Hey.
Matty, you nailed the quaddy on Saturday.
Now, I like the thanks, Spunky. Is this the other little angle that we've been pushing for the last couple of days that's coming to fruition? Difficult times to go dating, I must say, but that seems like a positive spin on a text message. My success in the dating world post-corona may purely come through tipping winners. I'm bringing nothing else to the table, so that might
tell
be something there.
Tell us how you got that quaddy on Saturday.
I didn't take it. Now, Michael, you're going to... You confess up here to what the circumstances were about my published quaddy, if you like, too.
Well, Matty Stewart gives his famous quaddy with Dan Malecki, who gives the early quaddy every Saturday morning on the race day morning. And on Saturday, as Matty was giving his quaddy, he had a phone breakup. So I reread the numbers. And in the last leg, I thought I heard him say number 11. He actually didn't put number 11 in, but I said he did. He kept his mouth shut. We put it out on social media that Matt Stewart put number 11 in Jittery Jack, and it lobs. So thanks to you, now known as Mr. Spunky, it was a clerical error that got all your loyal followers the quaddie on Saturday. And I think it paid about $1,500 or $1,600, didn't it?
Doesn't matter how it happens, Michael, as long as it does happen. The published numbers were the published numbers, and I'm sticking by them. So, and it's a rare display of teamwork from you and I that got us over the line, too. So, funny things can happen.
Well, sadly, I didn't take those numbers, but you did nail the two legs. You went one out Home of the Braid, one out Octane. And we'll talk more about the Flemington card in a moment. I'm keen to get your thoughts on the Missile, which was won impressively by Eduardo. Melody Bell was pretty disappointing, but there's big story in New South Wales about the situation with Nashua Willa, which I'm struggling to get my head around at the moment. He's been suspended and sent to a sports psychologist before he can come back. Now, Matty, I know you've spoken to Mark Van Gestel about that as well. We'll cover that off in a moment, but before we get to that, the big scare of the weekend was here in Victoria with the news that Jason Warren had to scratch his horses on Saturday, and they had a COVID positive from the partner of one of Jason Warren's stable hands. Now, guys, this is goes to show exactly what a fine line the racing industry is working here with the community transmission, the amount of people who have COVID and the amount of people that work in the racing game, and what needs to take place. Matty, what was your reaction when you heard about that?
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, sometimes you think, oh, it's scary that the situation is getting so close and that we're not so separate from the community, that the threats that are apparent in the community are not apparent in the racing world. You know, we had the Maryborough Trots one. There was one in Sydney with Matty Dale. There was one in Queensland. There was the Jason Warren one as well. But I think it's actually the opposite. I think it's reassuring that the safeguards are being enacted and actioned, and that whenever there's a potential risk, that the racing industry has protocols and the individuals within the racing industry are astute enough and aware enough of the consequences that they act. So I think these headlines, these COVID headlines that are popping up across the two codes in multiple states, are not a reflection that we're vulnerable, but a reflection that we're proactive and that our safeguards are watertight. Shark, what's your feeling about the, you know, whenever the word COVID comes up with a potential incident in racing, do you see that as a potential negative on racing, or do you see it that the protocols are actually kicking into action?
Yeah, I tend to take a similar line to you, Matty. Look, going back a month or so post the first round of isolation, I had a really good chat to Lee Jordan at VRC just to get my head around, okay, if there is a positive, say, in a stable, what happens? Does that mean racing shuts down? You know, what's the outcome? And Lee took me through their strategy, and yeah, it was reassuring because you get an understanding of the process. It's not just, somebody's got COVID, what do we do? You know, there is an actual designated program and process for horses moving out of an affected stable, for staff who are working in teams to swap over, for the contact tracing to begin, stables to be clean, all those sorts of things that happen. And it's very systematic and it's very reassuring. So I think the Jason Warren situation over the weekend is another step to that.
Well, let's find out from the man who's in the middle of it, Jason Warren. And I got an email late on Saturday night because I've got a horse in Jason's, or a share in a horse, and he put it out to all his owners about the situation. His horses were scratched on Saturday, and it seems that the steps taken and the swiftness of that that was put into place were first class. And as you said, Sharky, the protocols in place and the systems seem to be working. Jason, good morning to you. Can you walk us through the situation from your point and what it's like to be in the middle of this?
Morning, Michael, and the guys there. We just had to put measures in place to protect the not only my team of staff and but more so the greater well-being of the industry. You know, so we just took safety precautions and just went. I worked in closely with the Racing Victoria stewards and got a lot of good advice from Darren Trainer-Palou and his team. So look, really, just had to be careful, you know.
Did your experience of it, Jason, instill greater confidence that racing can keep the virus at bay, or did you feel that you were at risk? We were just before you came on, we were discussing whether these COVID potential threats in racing have been a worry or a reassurance. Did you feel the whole pre-process and what you knew about what you had to do and who you could contact and so on was reassuring, or the opposite?
Yeah, look, Matty, I never felt that myself or my team were at risk, but I just feel that it was our obligation to sort of be proactive and just put all measures in place to get everybody checked. So, you know, like this virus can smoulder along in somebody for a week before they even spike a temp or, you know, get an itchy throat. So we didn't... As soon as I found out that there was a close contact, I just contacted the RV stewards and then with the help of Jamie Steer and put measures in place to get all my staff tested and, you know, the medical department that more so looks over the jockeys, they were swift in helping put together a testing facility, which we got all of our staff tested on Saturday. And by Sunday morning, we started getting our results, which is far quicker than the... you know, the government system and very efficient. And look, everybody just worked together on it, which was really good. And there wasn't any finger pointing. And at the end of the day, you know, we've got to, you can look into these things and make sure that everyone's doing the right job. But at the end, first and foremost, we've got to be, take every precaution that the show goes on, you know, like we've got a spring carnival ahead of us. There's a lot of people in working in racing, and we want to keep it going.
So, Jace, you've all been tested, and you've got the results back probably by now. Is there a second test, you know, towards the end of, you know, that 12-day period that, you know, you hear a lot of people in the construction industry, they're being tested, and they're being tested again in about a week's time? Because, as you mentioned, that the virus can smoulder along in the system without showing any symptoms.
Yeah, look, I'd have to, you know, take further advice on that, Shark. But at this point, everyone was tested Saturday. The results all came back throughout yesterday. Everyone was tested on Saturday, and all the results came back through as of yesterday. And with the advice of Jamie Steer, he was a bit more than confident that we can proceed business as usual. Obviously, I've got runners at Pakenham today. We've got all the measures in place at the property. I guess it probably took a little bit of the heat out of the situation that we've got our own private training centre, and so it was sort of concentrated to one area, so I could get everybody tested that worked in that environment quite quick.
And Jason, it was one of your staff members who was married to a nurse, which once again just shows these frontline workers and the heroes, the dangers that they are putting themselves in during this shocking period. How is your staff member and how is his wife?
Look, she's in Rosebud Hospital at the moment with symptoms. My worker himself, he's in isolation, and under the government testing regime, they actually wait 11 days to have people that have been a close contact tested. So he's in isolation, obviously hasn't been anywhere near the stables, but RV, once again, have stepped up. They're going to have him tested, and... Though he's not showing, he's not symptomatic, he's going to be tested, and as much for peace of mind of everybody, you know, as himself. And, you know, I think it just goes to show how they've really taken care of their own, and it's really good to see.
Jason, different individuals have different levels of awareness and vigilance, and without putting words in your mouth, I guess if you were to give a message to others, other trainers who have staff under their umbrella and so on, and we've seen Bjorn Baker and others who have been not quite as vigilant in contacting the authorities, they've been more doing things in-house, would your message to other trainers at this time be to be as vigilant as you have been and to follow the processes? I guess the risk is others may have a less concerned approach to it, or a less professional approach to it. What would your message to other trainers be?
Oh, look, I guess, Matty, it's a responsibility of everybody in the industry. Like, at the end of the day, it's a lot bigger than having your stable shut down for a period of time, you know? Like, we've got a lot of racing ahead of us and exciting racing. So we need the show to go on, and I think you've got to be... I couldn't have done it without the help of the RV stewards and the medical department, because obviously I had to take a lot of advice to, you know, feel my way through. But, you know, I think I feel a lot more at ease having done everything the right way and taken all precautions than what I would have been if I just put my head down and poked along and just pretend it wasn't happening, you know.
Hey, Jason, just a quick one before we let you go. Have you picked out the next target for Brooklyn Hustle yet?
Yeah, Shark, she'll run at Moonee Valley again. You know, obviously, we're keen to keep her there for, until we need to go somewhere else. So she'll run in the Carline Stakes. It's a 1,000-metre listed race, opportunity for her to get some more black type and essentially just move through the grades a little bit further and... all being well, we will, you know, the Moya's on our radar, but she's got a couple of stripes to earn before she's entitled to a race like that. But she's going the right way. She bounced through her first up run, and she's just coming along super.
And have you got a winner today, Jase?
Yeah, I think Piero Pan's probably our best today. He had a good confidence win I think it was Tatura last start. There was a move meeting up there, and he's going really well. Trained on his gallop at Mornington last Tuesday was superb, and he's a good chance today in what looks to be an even race.
Good on you, Jason. Good luck today, and well handled on the weekend.
Thanks, guys. Best of luck.
Jason Warren joining us there, and I think Sharky Matty has hit the nail on the head in the fact that whilst it's a scary situation and it brings home the reality of the dangers that everyone in the racing industry is treading each and every day, the fact that it was handled so professionally, so swiftly, can give us confidence moving forward.
Sorry, I thought that was the shark. Well, that's
it,
right.
It was. Yeah, I don't know where Shark has gone.
Sorry, I thought you were referring about my comment to Sharky.
Anyway. I was, but Sharky seems to have faded away.
So, Shark, would you like to respond?
Sorry, boys. There's a slight delay here. I think the point you made, Michael, is spot on. Read that process. But the interesting point there was, and this is, I was talking to a friend yesterday who's in construction, and he's had the similar situation. They got tested immediately. There was somebody on site that had COVID. Everyone on site got tested, and then they have to get tested again towards the end of that 12-day period just to make sure that there's nothing bubbling away quietly. So I wonder what happens. That's that next part. Maybe one of the stewards can let us know there if there is a follow-up testing process to make sure that nothing gets through to the keeper.
And just on the COVID situation with those alleged breaches from Tio Nugent and Michael Poy, they had the investigation late last week, which is ongoing. It was carried over to this week, so I'm not sure when that will conclude. However, they're still waiting. Just as Jason said, when you have a close contact, they actually wait for a period of incubation before they actually test. So I don't think T.O. Nugent's actually being tested. I think he's due to be tested tomorrow. Michael Poy has been tested, so there will be still a bit of a delay until those jockeys can A, come back riding. I think we get the conclusion of that inquiry, which has now been ongoing for over a week. That's the latest with those boys as well.
Just a quick one on that as well. With Mark Van Gestel, the Crossroads Hotel contact tracing has all been concluded. There's nothing more to it. Bjorn Baker had a show cause and there was no further action taken about his approach to it with the staff members. So as far as the Crossroads outbreak goes, there's nothing more to learn about that. It's all done and dusted.
All right. And while we're speaking of COVID-19, today's cases have just been announced and it's 322, which is good. The new cases are decreasing. However, sadly, the number of deaths are increasing. 19 deaths have been reported overnight. So shocking figures as far as the fatality rates are concerned. We're going to take a break. You're listening to the Monday edition of The Verdict. Plenty to discuss on the other side of this. We'll talk about the good racing over the weekend, the Nashua Willis situation, all that still to come on The Verdict.
RSN 927's Racing Pulse presents The Verdict.
Welcome back to The Verdict. As we speak, there's an important set of jump outs being conducted at Flemington. Vow and Declare should be, if they're running on time, racing as we speak. Its heat was due to jump at 9.30, Russian Camelot 9.45. Humidor goes around at 10 o'clock. Hanseatic Tefane also going around this morning a little bit earlier. We'll be bringing you as much as we can as far as those results are concerned because they are jump outs. If you want to follow them online, the Flemington Twitter handle is putting each and every jump out up pretty quick, about 5 minutes after each heat, so you can have a look at them though. I get a bit frustrated with these jump outs, especially when we get on these metro tracks during this period of time. There's no official trials during COVID, and that is totally understandable, but these jump outs, we're watching them, there's no race call, there's no audio. I'm wondering whether there's something that maybe Racing Victoria can do with these metro clubs during the spring period where these jump outs essentially are trials. Should we get a caller to try and call these to try and help the punters out? Matty, Shark, what do you think?
Well, some of the jump outs on the country in the provincial circuits do have a caller. So it wouldn't, you know, they just get a young aspiring race caller to do it. And why not? It's great practice for them. Surely we can get somebody in a similar position to do it for these Flemington and Caulfield and Mornington jump outs where these better horses are.
I think it's good for vision and awareness and, you know, having a look. You know, I want to, you know, if you're curious to see what Russian Camelot looks like at the moment. But as far as a valuable tool, seeing, say, particular Vow and Declare and Russian Camelot, those sort of horses jump out of barriers in a straight line over 800 or 1,000 metres, you don't learn anything. They're not of any value to you. They're just an extension of track work. But I do see the advantage of the more the merrier. Like, if it was possible for me to watch Vow and Declare this morning with a race call and get some context, I'd probably watch it, but it's not going to help me whether I think he can win the Melbourne Cup again or not.
Oh, but there's a lot of other good horses, though, Matty. And I think these jump outs, Sharky, will be used as a great tool for a lot of form analysts about finding winners moving forward. So look, I understand that you can't get them shown on .com because they're not official trials and you're trying to reduce the amount of people at Flemington. And we get them up online very, very quickly. But maybe it's something at Racing Victoria and the metro tracks, as you said, Sharky, the tracks that do have these jump outs with the good horses coming back. You know, we could get a call put on afterwards or stick someone in the box for the one morning and get them to put some calls on it live. I think it would get a lot more traction on social media, a lot more people engaged in these horses because it is difficult to try and follow which horses which, especially if they're not in their normal race day colours as well.
Yeah, it's a great point. And look, some mornings it's, you know, in low light, so it's difficult to pick them up. So yeah, if you've got a caller, and as you say, it doesn't have to be live. It could be put over the vision later on when people have worked out and had the chance to work out who's who in the zoo during the heat. But yeah, it's the time of year to start paying attention to them. And Matt's right, you know, Vow and Declare, whether he jumps out nicely or not, it's kind of a moot point. We know what to expect from him when he can get out over more ground, but it is important for particularly I find at this time of year, the 2-year-olds turning three, you'll start to see some of the horses that perhaps were always going to come on as 3-year-olds start to really come forward and put themselves into the picture. And occasionally you do see the old standout 2-year-old that hasn't come back like it did or doesn't jump out like it did prior to its best 2-year-old form. So it can be a bit of a, you know, a decent sort of form guide for the younger horses, I find.
Before we talk about the weekend performances, Matty, I want to just talk about the issue with Nashua Willis. I was a bit surprised to read that he's been stood down. I think he's got a 7-day suspension or 7-meeting suspension until the end of this month, but he's unable to return to race riding until he has a couple of sessions with a sports psychologist, because he's had a number of whip breaches. He also got charged with careless riding on the weekend. He did ride the feature race winner, Eduardo, and he did have a double on the day. I haven't heard of a restriction being placed on a jockey. You cannot come back to the track until you see a sports psychologist for a careless riding charge before.
This was introduced in New South Wales about 12 months ago in concert with the Jockeys Association. They were fully in agreement that this was a good protocol. There's been two or three. Nash, I think, is the third one to be given this directive. I had a good chat to Mark Van Gestel about it today. There's a few different angles to it. One of them is privacy versus transparency. And Mark Van Gestel did say, look, it wasn't in the stewards' report for that reason of privacy. He said, but with the transparent nature of inquiries and so on, it was going to enter the public domain. And he defended that, saying, well, stewards need sometimes to be accountable for their decisions to in the public arena, and they ask, what are you going to do with these repeat offenders? And Shark, also to you and to Felgate, the use of psychologists, there's a stigma about going to the shrink, in inverted commas, but sports psychology is a very common tool with sports people and sports organisations these days. So I'm not sure that the demonising of the perception of going to the sports psychologist is the intention of the penalty. It's just part of a template that Racing New South Wales has drawn up. And I am supportive of it in that I don't think there is a stigma with a sports person being sent to a sports psychologist, especially one who may have a lot of things on his or her mind at 60 k's an hour in a field of 15 with high risk. So I actually don't have a problem with it at all, other than the fact that it needs to be explained for what it is clearly and to diffuse any sense of stigma.
Did Van Gestel ask, was Van Gestel clear on what exactly points that they want covered? Because that's, I suppose, what the question is.
What may be affecting his decision making? And I put it to Mark Van Gestel that Nash has had a very tumultuous 2 years, the Hong Kong incident and so on, and whether in the idea that a high volatility scene such as a jockey going out to race, that there is a requirement or a desire that they go out with a clear head, and that there aren't things that are affecting their judgment, things that could be sorted out or eased via discussion with a professional and so on. And he sort of half said, yes, there was an element of that to it. But he said, look, he's not a psychologist and he doesn't know what they talk about. But, Shark, I would say that mental health, obviously, and the clarity of mind of a jockey or any sports person, whether it's a golfer, whether it's Jason Day with three holes to go and things like that, they are tools, modern workplace tools, that they can trigger at certain moments in order to clear their head and be the best they can be.
Yeah, that's right. Like sports psychology, as you said, Matty, it's not about you're off to see the shrink. Sports psychology is about elite performance. And, you know, in those clutch moments, being able to, as you just said, do your very best, make the right call in those split-second decisions. It's about elite performance. It's not about, somebody's nuts and I have to go to the sports psychologist. That stigma, I think, you know, is well and truly off the mark with sports psychology. It's interesting reading Nash's comments during the hearing. And, so, you know, he basically said with Eduardo, which it looks pretty bad, like the horse is wandering around, and Nash is sort of like, he said, how much of it was the horse? Probably all of it in that case. And in the moments after the race too, Nash's first comments when he was very positive about the horse and its speed, and Eduardo at his best, we know he's a very, very fast animal. But he said, look, it might be time to play with some headgear on this horse, some winkers or blinkers or something, because he is wandering around the place over that last point of the race. And look, it was there for all to see on Saturday.
To be honest, I didn't see the head on, but I didn't see that Nash did a lot wrong with Eduardo. He wobbled a bit. The horse behind had to slightly ease. you know, he wasn't in contention. I think there's a heightened sensitivity in Sydney off the Bowman-Adkins story of a fortnight ago of jockey safety and jockey actions and keeping them straight and so on. There was, Michael, a lot of backlash on social media to the fact that he was directed to three sessions with the psychologist. One of them was Stacey, his sister, Stacey Rewilla, who thought this was a private issue and how dare they publicise it. And others were saying, oh, as if a session with a shrink is going to help and all that sort of stuff. And look, I fully sympathise with Stacey. She's obviously Nash's sister, and Nash has had a roller coaster. But I think there's a misperception of the nature of it. Rather, there's not a connotation involved with those who require sports psychology. It's almost something that sports people should seek out, rather than I'd be curious to know if Nash, what his view on it was as well, you know.
Well, every professional sports organisation in the world has their own sports psychologist. David Hayes spoke about the fact that he went and saw a sports psychologist, when he went through that tough time at Euroa and how much it helped him. So, I agree with you. There's no stigma. For me, I thought the interesting part was the fact that he was directed to do that. Now, I need to get some clarification, because I'm not sure whether that direction is part of the penalty, and if you don't complete those sessions, we will not allow you to come back to ride. That was the only interesting aspect from me. There's no issue with seeing a psychologist. I think most people in sports-related activities have a psychologist on their team to enhance their performance as much as possible.
And from the stewards' point of view, what they saw was a jockey who's a champion of the game, who is repeat offending on a number of fronts, whipping and careless riding, more than is tolerable in a volatile environment. So the tool that they have implemented is, okay, we need to be doing as best we can for you and for your fellow riders and the punting public. Under our umbrella now is the fact that you will be required to do this. And I have no issue with it whatsoever.
What do you make of Melody Bell? Sharky, you first?
Look, she was at face value a little bit disappointing, but again, is she here to win a missile stakes, or has she got bigger targets on her radar later on? The sort of tempo that they set in that race probably wasn't going to suit her. She got a little bit attached early. I'm not making any call on Melody Bell just yet. I'd like to see her when she gets out in trip second, third up, then we start to see her really sort of come into her own. This is like a barrier trial for her, really.
She had no hope in that race. Look, with the way it was set up, with a fast wet tracker in front and with her with bigger goals. But having said that, I stick by what I said the other day. I think she's a bit of a high-class floater. I don't think she's a... You look at the last few runs of her career as opposed to the previous stack of group ones. She's not a powerhouse. She's not a force. She's a player, but she's a bit of a mystic journey for me. She's in that sort of category now. Like, I see Russian Camelot, the top Perth mare of Bob Peters. What's her name again? She hasn't raced for a while.
Arcadia Queen.
Arcadia Queen, Russian Camelot. I see them as the ones that might be the pushing champion status, but I see these mares as sort of high class floaters who may win an Empire Rose or may win a Matriarch or run fourth on a Cox Plate. But I'm not going to be backing Melody Bell as if she's a champion. You know,
is Anders a genuine contender for? I mean, who knows? They're talking Everest. What do you make of his win on the weekend?
It was a good, solid win, wasn't it? I guess he had that residual race fitness on his side from that late autumn into pushing into deep into May campaign. He's always been a horse that the Mar and Eustace camp have had a bit of a rap on. He's had a bit of a reputation at home, but it just took a while for the penny to drop with the horse. We're starting to see him now dominate races from the front. Look, Ola Kirk is going to be better when he gets to 1400 and a mile. There's no doubt about that. It ran really, really well, but wet track. We know Anders is already a heavy track winner. He was fit. He was there. You know, he's probably improved a bit on what we saw of him in May, but I'm not getting carried away just yet with Anders.
Hey, just back to Eduardo. I know we touched on this on Saturday, but isn't it amazing what certain trainers can do in a short period of time? And the background for Joseph Pride is John Size. And John Size was a devotee of Henry Davis, the great Brisbane trainer, and also one of his students was Lindsay Smith. So there's a really good tie-in with all of these amazing trainers with the very specific things they do. Henry Davis, Lindsay Smith, John Size, Joe Pride, with their ability to turn around horses with changes of track work and changes of environments. And they were the first to sort of use heat training, in inverted commas, and staggered training and different, just a way, way different way of doing it, where they can turn around a horse who was well trained down here, but in the space of 6 weeks has turned that horse who was kind of going nowhere into an Everest contender. It's quite amazing in such a short period of time what some trainers can do.
There's no doubt about that. I've got an SMS here on that. Hariva said, I want to know what Pride has done to get Eduardo right. The horse is absolutely flying. A few SMSs here as well to go through, gents. Anders, I want to see him do it on a dry track. I think that's probably a fair call. And then there's a few here on the sports psychologist. I'll read through a few of these. Maybe don't call it sports psychologist. Maybe call it an employment counsellor. I'm no elite sportsman, but my employer sent me to a counsellor. It was the best thing I ever did. That's from Pev. The stigma attached to seeing a psychologist needs to be wiped. It should be standard process for any elite athlete to see a sports psychologist. I'd go as far to say that if they aren't seeing one, they're not getting the best out of themselves. Does Nash require a mental health clearance to return to riding? Otherwise, what's the point? And that was the question I was raising. Is that part of his standard or part of the suspension?
What about Josh Cartwright and Dylan Carbosh and others who have really found themselves in a lot of hot water for heat at the moment? Dylan Carbosh, remember, he punched the horse and he really copped it on social media, and then obviously Josh Cartwright with what he did. If it wasn't for sports psychologists as part of their armoury coming through, they may never have made it out the other end.
No doubt about that. We're going to take a quick break. Keep the SMSs going. This is The Verdict. More on the other side.
RSN 927's Racing Pulse presents The Verdict.
Quickly, Alligator Blood looms up on the outside. Vincent Express is run to the lead, then nicely clear from Crypto Tycoon and Highland Sun. But Alligator Blood travelling sweetly with 100 metres left to go and is edging clear to win the trial nicely. Alligator Blood by about a long neck to a half length on the line from Incheon Express and 3 lengths away.
That was the Gator Blood back yesterday with a soft trial win, as you would expect. I don't think he was beating up on anything of great quality there, but the reports are that he's come back just as well, if not better, and we'll get to see him for the first time, I think, in Doomben on the 12th of September. Where does he fit in this spring carnival, do you think, Matty?
I keep thinking he's a summer horse, a dry track horse, you know, like a Melbourne summer, Gold Coast. Look, I might be wrong. Has he got any much exposure to rain-affected ground? He may have, but I don't know about Alligator Blood. Obviously, I hope for David Van Dyke's sake that that the story takes off. But I think he's a bit of a crossroad horse. I know the ratings guys, Shark, are not as in love with the Blood as some of the rest of us or some others are. So I just have a feeling that he might be a firm track summer autumn horse, but I might be wrong.
He has been a soft track once. It was a soft five when he won the Hayes Stakes back in February when he just got the better of Catalyst. So you're right. We don't know about him on significantly rain-affected ground just yet. The winning record is there for all to see, isn't it? So that's the part we can't argue about. He just keeps getting the job done. Maybe he's one of those horses that just keeps putting himself into those dangerous positions in 1400 and 1600 metre races and gets the job done more often than not because his racing pattern is so good. You know, anything that can land in the first three or four on settling regularly at that trip and then quicken, you win a lot of races in Australia doing that.
Hey, gents, do we take anything for the Spring Carnival out of Flemington on Saturday? It was good to see Home of the Brave back in the winner's stall. I think that was Ollie's fifth Ori Star. He rode him magnificently. It's going to get Matty through COVID, but is he a horse that can actually progress throughout the Spring Carnival now that he's won a race?
I don't think rising 10-year-olds are renowned for progression. But I think if they keep him in a straight line where it simplifies the equation because he's a tricky old bugger, so keep it as simple as possible. Hope he draws the right lane. And there's one or two of those group twos. I think there's a Gil guy still that he might run fourth or fifth in or something like that. But Octane reminds me a little bit of Jason Warren's filly that we were just talking earlier on. Similar Brooklyn type Hustle. Of turn of foot and so on. Yeah, absolutely. I just think Oakley Plates and races like that might be something with 52 kilos that a horse like Octane could win in the autumn. I don't know what's there for him in the spring other than Shark, that he passed his straight test as well as those South Australian judges like James Jordan thought he would on the weekend.
Yeah, he did, and accelerated like he has been doing in South Australia, and that South Australian form is standing up at the moment. There's quite a few winners that have come over in the last few weeks. I'm thinking he probably fits in around that listed Group 3 grade, and maybe a race like the Sprint on Melbourne Cup Day might be a nice target for him. A couple of others that caught the eye there. I thought Gamekeeper was really good first up in the Ori Star. We know he can run 2,000. Where he gets to in terms of business, distance and class-wise, I'm not too sure, but I think he's stakes class. Coming Around is the other one I think we should take note of. He mapped to get the greatest run of all time. He got it. Liam Reardon got him through that little gap there at the top of the straight, and the horse clicking away well. I think he'll extend and really continue to go through the grades when he gets to 1,600 and 2,000 metres. He might be a lively chance that'll level out around that Group 3 level. Possibly a bit better, but I know Brent Stanley's got a bit of time for him. And you'd have to think Tabby Dance was in that same conversation, at least to listed Group 3 standard. That win in race 4 was very good. Does he head towards races like the Heavily or the Naturalism, horse like Tabby Dance?
Hey, there was a bit of discussion about whether the 1,800 metre race should have proceeded because the entries were down. I know that RV, at one point, were keen to scrap it because they weren't going to get a full field. I know a few of the trainers said, well, hang on a minute, we can cobble together a field of four or five. But it is an interesting one for me because on the one hand, the industry wants to promote staying horses, but if they get a small take-up and then scrap the race, does that have just too negative a mindset effect on trainers with those sort of horses? And I have no issue on a Metro Saturday with running a four- or five-horse field. It doesn't worry me that it doesn't satisfy wagering turnover necessarily. It's only one of nine races, and to me they're important building block races, even if there's not a particularly big take-up in one edition. I think if you're trying to encourage maturing staying three-year-olds or late two-year-olds, you can't take a race away just because it doesn't have a high take-up. You've got to have faith in it and leave it on the program and on the calendar. Do you guys have a view on that?
Yeah, I tend to agree, Matty. I think there's definitely a place for it, particularly at benchmark level, because soon enough, you'll be asking these horses the only option for these horses will be at stakes level, and some of them just aren't up to it. So we must give some of these young stayers the opportunity to go and learn their craft against, similarly talented opposition. And I think Saturday's benchmark, 70 for the three-year-olds. So there's a couple of horses there that probably have designs on going to stakes races later in the spring. The winner, Cafe Rizzo, is probably one of them. But others there will need that experience, I think. We probably saw that with Frankie Two Angels. Great example. Dennis Pagan's horse. He's going to be a nice stayer, but at the moment it just might be happening a bit soon for him.
Just a bit of a roundup on all of these good horses that are trialling at the moment. We've got some nice trials down at Caston as well. Harbour Views finished third. Galo Shop finished fourth. Actow, I believe, won the jump out this morning very impressively, the one that Vow and Declare was in. We'll get some information through on Russian Camelot as well. And tomorrow, boys, we get to see Farnham back in Sydney. So all these good horses are back. And speaking of the good horses being back, I cannot wait for Caulfield on Saturday. PB Lawrence Stakes Day, which traditionally is where we get to see the kickoff of a lot of good horses, and it'll be interesting to see which ones of Bob Peters we get to see. Regal Power, Arcadia Queen could be entered. We might have Mystic Journey in there as well. I think Kings Will Dream. So Saturday's going to be a mouthwatering day, and Willie Pike starts his spring campaign in Melbourne. Matty, it's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out with Willie and who he's going to choose from Bob Peters' superstars.
Well, I did a bit of a radio spot with Perth this morning, and those guys seem to be under the impression that Regal Power and Arcadia Queen are both going to run. So you might be able to lock that one in for that race on Saturday. They felt that Regal Power would probably be the better option for Pike in that particular race, but that might change. So that might give an indication of where the feeling is of where Arcadia Queen is right now. I assume that if she was up and going, that she would probably be the maybe more precocious in a race like that, but maybe there's more of a slowly but surely sort of attitude towards her comeback with an eye to something like the Cox Plate?
Yeah, that could be the read, couldn't it, on the back of those comments. But look, I just think it's exciting that we've got them both heading towards a Cox Plate, whereas last year, you know, we had one going off to Golden Eagles and all these sorts of things and chasing the money. This year we get to see them have a designated preparation towards the best weight for age race. I think that's really exciting. I mean, you know, without international participation potentially in the Cox Plate, unless the O'Brien family send some horses. And we want the very best horses in the country heading to the Cox Plate this year. So it's great to see that Bob Peters is thinking that way with two of his best.
Hey, just on Golden Eagles and so on, Michael, just a quick one. One other comment that Mark Van Gestel made, which was interesting about, I asked him his view of the border issue, and he said, look, our expert advice is that there is a risk of transfer from bridles and headgear and all that sort of stuff, that sort of level of contact. And I asked him, well, is there no such risk with breeding stock? And he was a bit vague on that one, but said that there is probably enough of a distinction to allow the breeding movement, but not the racing movement. But he was suggesting that their advice, this involves all those horses that we want to head north, was that there was a risk of contamination across horse equipment. So I hadn't quite heard it explained in that way before, so that's interesting.
I've got an SMS saying it was good to see Mitch Beer with a winner at Wagga yesterday, speaking of that. That's from Justin in Yarrowa. A few other SMSs as we round out the show. This is one I wasn't aware of, and I'm going to follow it up on tomorrow's program. What about 77-year-old Hannah Powell, who has only four horses in work? They all raced over the weekend for two wins, a third and a fourth, all home breeds.
One of them was yesterday. It was a big win too. Knocked off a Alton Zara favourite, much to my chagrin. that's a good story, actually. I'll follow that up.
Yeah, well done, Sharky, for giving me the first two winners on Saturday. A couple more SMSs thanking you, Maddie, for your tipping on Saturday. A question for everyone. Bob Peters, which of his horses will be the star of the spring? That's from Craig and Keelor.
Superstorm.
Acadia Queen's probably the best of them, but whether she's still the best, given what, you know, the interruption. Regal Power's the one that the Jungle Drum's beating for, that I'm hearing, so... Shark, they might all be as good as each other, which is pretty scary.
Yeah. Not if you're Bob Peters. It could be a very lucrative spring.
He'll be joyous, Bob. He's up and about, isn't he, Bobby?
Well, he might. Yes, he's ebullient, isn't he? Hey, just before we wrap up, the match race that we'd been wanting for in the world of harness, the bubble burst on Saturday night, Lochinvar Art, he was beaten at $1.04. He finished third, not surprisingly. Subsequent to that, it's come out that he's got a viral infection, so he wasn't right. He laboured into third place. Ride High goes around this week. They won't be clashing. He's got a couple of weeks off, but hopefully we can get them together. But it just goes to show these are animals, not machines, and the best laid plans. Maddie?
Well, look, I think one thing that has been achieved is that there's increased awareness of these horses now, even if they don't have the match race, which is off. Like, people who didn't know about Ride High and Lochinvar Art now do. So I'm more likely to watch Ride High's next race, whether it's a match race or not, whereas 2 weeks ago I'd probably never heard of him. So, and I think others are a bit the same. So I think there's, at the very least, there's increased awareness of who these horses are and what they're capable of doing.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Hey, gents, it's worked reasonably well, our first group Zoom verdict. Nothing like being in the same room as all of you, but despite a couple of minor technical issues, we seem to have got through it unscathed. So well done, gents.
I wasn't the worst of the three, which was a rare treat.
yeah, we'll get Sharky to work on that delay.
No, we're all good now. We've got things patched up. Mikey's back there sorting out, so that's good. I don't know about the ISO beard, though, Matty. That's looking a bit... I don't know. Just looking... Sam, you know, Neill sort of vibe going on.
This isn't good for my dating sort of situation, but I've as you can see, I've given up.
Well, Huggy Bear from the SMS earlier, who was it that was texting you?
Spunky. So
Schnookie or something, yeah.
Schnookums or something.
Oh, yeah, you're getting a bit too far-fetched now. Gentlemen, I'll let you go. It's a beautiful day. Enjoy your 1 hour of exercise and stay strong, as with all the listeners during this lockdown period. After the break, we're going to try and find you a little bit more joy. We're going to try and find you some winners today. Speak soon, gents.